One was still, I guess, and they're awful hot. You know, I guess one was still and started a fire, and then the whole slash got on fire when they got to poor little Bernie there. And a darn trolling boat went and reported me shooting a machine gun in Port Alberni Inlet. And there was an officer standing in the on the dock when I got there, and he said, K49136, planes private of sea. Have you got you aboard? Skipper Wally says, yeah, he's here. So, took me up to the dock, put me in a jeep, took me to a camp, and boy, did they ever lecture me. Oh, they did everything to me. But they didn't hurt me or anything. They just browbeat me with the things I shouldn't have done, things I should have done. And, oh, but I thought, oh, well, that's okay. I made $10 out of it anyway. Yeah, well, I guess that's... And then there was a discharge after that out of the Army. All they did was give me my discharge paper, say, here you are, there he is. There's not a brochure with it, or there's not even a note with it says you can get this or you can get that, or you can just, here it is, get the hell out. That was it. Yeah, so.
Whereas most of the crew, you mentioned that Captain Wally was Aboriginal from outside of Alaska. Was any other of your crew?
I forget the name of his reserve. It's not...
Metlakatla.
Huh? Metlakatla. Yeah, he was from Metlakatla. And I think there's a bunch of Leydens there yet. If you ever see any of those Leydens that know Wally Leyden, tell them you were talking to his best pal, because I'll show you why. He was at our wedding when we got married, and he was a company sergeant major.
Oh, it's here.
I was picked for this job. It wasn't only my experience of the inlets. Well, I guess that was the most one of the most things. But I was picked from Victoria to Ahauset. That was the territory I knew best. I knew all the inlets. I knew everywhere to go to hide or to do this or to do that, or what the beaches were like, where was a good beach and why it was, and all that sort of thing. I knew that in my territory. Leonard Nelson, the other guy that I worked with down here, he was from Ahauset to Cape Scott. See? And he knew all, because he was born, raised in Ahauset, and he knew the whole territory, every inlet, nook and cranny to Cape Scott. And then from Cape Scott to... what
Wally. Then Wally was...
Yeah, that was Wally, but what was the name of that reserve again?
Metlakatla.
Metlakatla. From Cape Scott to Metlakatla was Wally's... see, and they had home people working in their most the territory that they knew best. Eh? So that's what made it so successful. Is I wouldn't want to chase one of us guys at night running around in them inlets. We knew where every rock pile was because we had to set nets in there, set seines and stuff like that, and we knew where a submarine couldn't go and why he couldn't go there, and why we'd try to beach him, you know. We'd go in between rocks and whatever.
But you didn't tell her about your job was to keep them coming out of the
submarine. Yeah.
you know, lifting that and coming on deck because their guns would be on deck, and he had to stop them.
So you actually were shooting at submarines?
Pardon?
You were actually shooting at submarines?
No, I never shot at one. No, they wouldn't let us see them. Once we got there, they and found out, I guess, what we could do. They. Because, a submarine, if you see it in time, you're going to go for shallow water right away. And we could go in among them islands full speed and never, you know, and all the time we're telling the world where they are, you know. And even if they were in one inlet, all those bombers that come over the top of us, if they each dropped a bomb in one of them inlets, they could cover the whole inlet and just that fast. You know, anything that's in the inlet would be blown apart. But they, I guess they could see that. They must have, because they sure left in a hurry.
I guess their aim was to get the island here next.
Oh, yeah.
Like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, some of our guys said,
Victoria.
This is coming up to be Pearl Harbor, too. So, I don't know.
What was your rank going in?
Pardon?
What was your rank?
Private.
Private?
Born a private, and I'm still living and not died one yet. I'll show you Wally and the crew.
Or I'll just take this with you.
You tell them guys that you know Wally's pal.
Yes, you can't see it very well. There's no lights in here.
Now we'll take this where we can see.
This is your window.
My grandson brought me roses and daddy.
There you are now.
This is your wedding picture?
Yeah. I don't know who that is.
That's you.
Now there's Wally here.
Oh, wow.
Wally Layton. This guy's George Evans. And I don't know who that is either.
That's
and this is her girlfriend's here.
I had her sing. She sang for us at the wedding. That's why she had...
And this little girl here, this was not her and my wedding. It was hers.
Oh.
She married me.
The little flower girl?
That's what she said. That's what she claimed. Claimed all along that she was my wife. And
so you got married in your uniform.
Yeah.
Was that before or after you went out?
That was,
44.
Before I went out, wasn't it?
Before you.
No,
before you
we got married in 43.
44,
yeah.
We got married.
Yeah, 44.
But
so
we
I was
knew
in
each other before he joined.
That's after I told the commanding officer that I had a fiancé in Vancouver.
Oh, it was a terrible time trying to get gowns and a veil. You know, you couldn't even buy nylons. Mom made her dress.
That's beautiful.
We were just lucky to get, but we had to wait for my veil.
I'll just set it right here. We'll put it back later. Yeah. Wally and I, we went through a lot together. But we did it laughingly. Wally was one of the nicest men I have ever known. You know, you meet a lot of these type of people during the war, but he was, I don't know how closer you can get to a brother, but he was like that, you know. But I don't know where I was when he drowned.
He was the only private.
I think I was in the Bering Sea when he drowned.
I don't know. You weren't home.
I know.
But he wasn't married then, but he got married after the war.
He got married after the war?
Wally did. And then he went back fishing. And his boat got lost. And I never did find him.
That's tough.
Yeah,
it was hard on me.
But he's got a family. I'm not quite sure where they live, in New Westminster or Richmond.
Yeah, and he was a company sergeant major, one down from the regimental sergeant major.
There weren't too many Aboriginal sergeant majors.
No, there sure weren't. They said I was the next thing to a sniper, but they never ever called me that. The commanding officer said that, but they never mentioned any sniper in my as long as I was in there.
Or
machine gunner. They didn't.
But that's why you get a pension for your ears.
Yeah, that's the reason I get a pension, because of that machine gun. And the big engine and the boat and the 1090 days listening to it. So
that's a long time to be out at sea.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't continually.
Well, it wasn't, but it was every day. But at night we'd be in the inlets, roaring around in the inlets looking. Oh, there's a nice bluff over there. That's where that one should hide. A submarine could hide there. Let's go look in there. So we'd roar in there and take a look, make sure we're in shallow water, and get running around in just the shallow water, and go down in one side and out the other. And we never could get them. But we knew they were there somewhere. And they couldn't surface in the Pacific Ocean. They couldn't do it. That is offshore, eh? Because the minute they'd come up offshore, they'd be seen right away. Because that's why some of the airports were built, for those bombers to be ready. And they did a good job. Anyone would have to take their hats off to them, to the Army for and Air Force and Navy for doing what they did, because by God they had it figured out right. As far as we were concerned, we felt a lot easier with the people we had backing us up, eh? That's about all I can say about it. They were something else. Hard outfit to try and fight with there. And I guess some little nips knew that.
What happened to your uniform?
My uniform, I threw it away. When I got out of the Army, I said, "No more of this, by God! I'm
well,
finished."
Fit it now.
And there's no way I could get in it now anyway. So I just took my uniform and just threw it with the little. I guess the only reason I had those two is because I must have been.
Well, threw them in the drawer. Wasn't until he joined National Aboriginal
that I ever put them on again.
Oh, the medals.
Yeah,
the medals.
Yeah. But the uniform was gone, including my gum boots. And you know, I never heard any non-participant in that outfit call us gumboot Navy, civilians, you know. It was all us guys calling ourselves gumboot Navy, because that's what we were. You know, it was something.
But they thought they would be all alone when they were way off, offshore. And that's when they had to phone and give their position. It was all arranged that they'd do that. And all the airplanes would come.
So you'd have Air Force backup when you get into position. You'd have Air Force backup when you got into position?
Hundreds and hundreds of them. They weren't just the odd one flying around here. They were buzzing all over the place. Well, like, say, I don't hear many people talk about it, that this was going to be... they were after Victoria. Yeah, from what we can make out, was that they were after Victoria, Vancouver Island, and Vancouver. They were getting ready to bomb it. But when the Yanks, I guess the Yanks, when they put their taken their army in there, they must have had big shiploads, because, and I guess they knew they were coming, because they got out just before they got there. Yeah. And I guess the reason they dropped bombs is because they wanted to lighten up to get home faster. But I guess that's how critical it was. So, but yeah, when I first learned how to practice with that machine gun, this Harry Kemp, the regimental sergeant major from here, he taught me. We did a lot of practicing. Like I say, all fishermen, and we hate sea lions.
Oh,
I needn't say any more. And so it every once in a while I think of it. It brings back memories of who was there, what we did, how we did it. You know, it's quite a thing. I would never want to do it again. But of course, when you get older, you're a little smarter than you are. And I never told you about when I joined the army. I think I skipped that. As they took us into this place where we were going to join the army. And they're sitting on this, like I said, Leonard Nelson was K-49-135, mine's K-49-136. And he said, now when you're going to join the army, we have to know your nationality first. He said, that's what goes on. I said, well, I'm a North American Native Indian. He looked at me and he said, no. He said, you can't join the army that. Under that, he said, there's no such a nation of people. He said, yeah. He said, that's not going to work. He said, it won't. He said, they're not conscripted. He said, they're just not. They just can't go and grab you and tell you. He said, you don't look like a full-blooded Indian to me. I said, well, look me over. I said, because that's exactly what I am. And he said, well, he said, surely there must be some other nationality in you. He said, what nationality was your mother? I said, she was an Indian. She was the oldest
princess.
daughter of the...
Yeah, she was the oldest princess in this on, in this reserve. I'm a hereditary chief and all this sort of thing. He said, no, I said, it's not going to work. He said, surely you must be some. He said, what was your father? I said, well, I'm sorry, I didn't know my father, but I have a stepfather. I said, my stepfather, and I told him what I told you about my stepfather, and I said, he's from Calais, France. And he said, oh, he's a Frenchman, eh? I said, oh, yeah. I said, that's my stepfather. He said, oh, yeah, well, that's great. He said, he's from Calais, France, eh? I said, yeah. He said, okay, and he wrote French down on my, on my,
status.
Yeah, and there went my status, boom, right out the window, because it's a federal thing. You know, it's not just a souk paper. You know, you're French from then on. So that's how come I couldn't get back on this reserve until Bill C-31 come on, and then I got
although
back.
Although we were here.
Yeah, we were here. Yeah, but I was always told when I was a child that when they gave me my name and they said, "No, Frankie, that's." Your name, going to be your name. He says, it was your name when you were born. He said, it's going to be that way when you're until you die. He said, there's nobody can take it away from you. He said, unless you want to give it
away.
Well,
his grandfather threw a big, I guess, potlatch, and he said the harbor was full of
it was
clues.
It was a naming
party.
Naming
party. Brought his sister and him back. And of course, Ottawa didn't want him to look at his papers, French.
Yeah.
So were you named in your language?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my name is Kwakiak.
Kwakiak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the oldest hereditary chiefs names that are here in this reserve. I got my younger brother, Jack. He has a name of another hereditary chief. He has I forget his name again. I forget a lot of things. And then Jimmy Cooper is another one, but his name
down the line.
His name is Walsia, and I figured with Jack, but there's three hereditary chiefs on this reserve, but they're all...
Well, Jimmy Cooper was, his mother was the younger daughter. The other children passed away.
So anyway, that's how that goes.
Your mom must have been relieved when you came home.
Oh, yeah, you know, I grew up here, eh? And a lot of things I used to do. I used to love these old ladies, you know, around here. They'd take me everywhere. They'd say to me, of course, me being the oldest boy on this reserve, and I was just in the stage where I could row fairly good, you know, and they take a family canoe, and they, I guess, they'd look at the tide and they'd study the tide. There was five of them, I think, five of the old ladies, and they'd say, "Well, Sonny, we're gonna go and get seafood tomorrow." I said, "Oh yeah." They said, you're going to come and row for us and help us. And I said, oh, yeah. But the day before, they'd make lunch. Eh? And when them ladies made lunch, man, they made lunch. They, you know, I wasn't used to having all that all them goodies passed to me, you know. And they'd sing all the way out the harbor, out to where we get seafood. They'd sing all the way out there and sing all the way back, and they'd spear all kinds of little things like flounders and sea cucumbers. We used to call them okras. They'd spear them, and they'd get enough of them they wanted, and they'd get sea urchins. They'd get a whole bunch of stuff and put all in their baskets. Their baskets in a pretty good sized canoe, but they'd all paddle. They weren't real powerful at it, but they'd sit there singing away and paddling all the way. We were mostly going with the tide going out there, and then when the tide started to come in, then we'd come home. They had her all figured.
And your mom used to steer the...
Yeah, she used to sit in the back with the kind of a captain, so to speak, you know. She'd sit there and steer and paddle a little bit, turn over to this side, over this, singing away. They'd all sing their songs.
That was your mom who would steer?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. She's the one that taught me everything. She taught me to shoot. She taught me everything. She was a crack shot herself. And not only that, she owned 9 guns that... soon as my grandfather died, they were left to her. And then from her, they were left to me. But when I went away in the war, I had younger brothers coming up. Well, they got four or five years older than when I left. Eh? And they took the guns, I guess, and sold them or whatever they did to them. When I got home here, I didn't have a gun to my name. So, and it kind of suited me for a while until I figured, well, we should have a feed of ducks and no shotgun. But when we were married and they paid us for, you know, money, I guess it's a payoff, it is, I don't know. I bought a shotgun and some shells with it. And then got her. She lived in it right deep in the heart of Vancouver, and I brought her out here, out to Point No Point, and threw her in a tar paper shack and said, that's where we're going to live. And I worked in a sawmill out there until I could contact the other skippers on the other boats and get a job fishing again.
Had to walk quite a ways to get a bucket of water from the spring.
Yeah. Yeah, to carry water from the spring.
But that's not the worst part of it is. The worst part of it is I'm walking down Vancouver and I'm meeting all my pals, my fishing pals that I grew up with, and they all got great big sailing boats, 60s and 70 footers, all brand new, and looking around they said, whoa, boy, I said, you want to come and see my boat? Oh, yeah. And I didn't have even a dinghy, hardly. And so I went down and looked at their boats, and I thought, well, okay, Frank Plains, this is what I'm saying to myself. Now comes catch-up time. But during the war, the way they made heck of a lot of money was the oil from a dogfish kept the airplane's wings from freezing. They put that oil on the airplane's wings, and that oil became like liquid gold, and they made nothing but money because there was nothing but dogfish printer wherever you looked, you know. So they cut a whole bunch of them, and they bought their big boats, and here's me standing here with nothing but a big smile. So I thought, well, shortly after that, we wound up with that boat there.
In that picture?
Yeah. That was the last boat I was captain on. And, Joan W. 2 was the last one. This was, see, we owned that boat. I was mate on that boat with an old man from Souk here for 3 or 4 years or more. And we used to fight like cats and dogs anyway. And I'd tell him I quit. And he'd come and grab me back every once in a while. And then we went. He said to me one day, he said, "You know, you got to take the boat salmon fishing on the blue line out here in Juan de Fuca Strait," he said, "this year," he said. "But don't phone me," he said, "I'm going on a holiday." So I kept the crew that was on board there. Had a pretty good season. And he come back and he said, "Well, we're going to go fishing herring this winter." "Oh, yeah." And he said, "You're going to run the boat too." And he said, "You're going to be the skipper running that boat," he said, "and I'll give you a bonus." I said, "Oh, yeah, that sounds good. I'll be there." So the herring season, just before it opened, he said, phoned, and he said, "Vancouver tomorrow, we're going to head up north." So I got there about in the evening, and I went over, and he owned the boat, you know, and he had it built. It was practically brand new, and it was a Pacific Belle, eh? And he said, "Well," I said, "when are we going to pull out here?" He said, "What the hell are you asking me for?" I said, "You're the skipper." So I said, "Okay, we'll pull." I looked at the tide